This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Earthwise, Environment and Peace with Justice interviews on Plains FM 96.9.
Welcome to Earthwise. I'm Martin Griffiths. For today's program, Lois and I feel honoured to be talking live in the studio here in Christchurch with the Cuban ambassador to New Zealand, His Excellency Mario Alzugaray.
Well, Cuba is a country that has interested us and some of our friends for some time. So welcome to Earthwise, Ambassador.
Thank you very much.
Well, Mario, your visiting us here in Christchurch almost coincides with ex-US President Obama's brief visit to New Zealand. Our media has been full of praise for Obama, not a word of criticism, I might almost say sycophantic. Not a word, for instance, about his promise to close the US torture prison in Guantanamo. How does your government, and for that matter, how do the Cuban people feel about Guantanamo prison being on Cuban soil?
Well, Martin, thank you very much for your question. I think it's a very interesting question. I think for one reason, first of all, I would think the Obama administration was very good at public relations. Mm-hmm. So these guys know how to present themselves. But on the other hand, if you compare Obama with what it's happening now, there's not going to be any word of criticism for Obama. So at the end, I think that has a lot of influence on that. And we in Cuba have very mixed feelings about Obama. Obama did a great thing. I think he's gonna have the legacy of trying to change relations with Cuba in a positive way. But in practical terms, he did not much. Guantanamo Bay, as you said, is one of the best examples of this situation. There's a huge debate about closing the prison or not. And it's the question you ask, but there's never a word about giving back Guantanamo Bay to Cuba.
Since 1905, I believe, something like
it's
that.
It's 1902. We never got independence from Spain. Spain handled the country to the United States after the so-called, in English, it's so funny because when I arrived to New Zealand, I've never worked in an Anglo-Saxon country before, and I realized it's called Spanish-American War.
That's what we called it growing up in
but
America.
But the war takes place in Cuba. And it's in Spanish, in Cuba, you call it Spanish-Cuban-American War.
Yes.
In Spain, you call it the Cuba War.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
And though involved also the Philippines, Guam, Puerto Rico, other territories, the main battlefield was in Cuba. And actually, the United States got involved in the war by using they blew one of their own ships, the main ship in Havana, and they used it as an excuse to enter the war. So they put few conditions for Cuba to become independent in 1902. One of them was to concede several bases for coal and naval bases. We only conceded one, but funny enough, the agreement says that the situation will stay like that unless both parties agree otherwise, which is the party that doesn't agree otherwise. But it's a complete violation. And when we listen to the United States talking about sanctions to other countries for invading or occupying illegally someone else's territory, I think it's very hypocritical that no one raises the issue of Guantanamo Bay.
Yes.
So Guantanamo is basically part of the United States in practice, is it?
Well, yeah, in practice, if part of the United States, there's a border there and heavily observed by both sides, but they control all the surroundings. Two sides of the entrance of the Guantanamo Bay. It's a very open bay, but they control the two sides when you enter Guantanamo Bay.
What is the area, if I might ask?
Oh, I really don't know, but it's a very important bay, and it's probably one of the most important in the eastern side of the country. I mean, it wasn't picked by the United States just accidentally. Mm. And it's also very important for them because it's on the southern coast of Cuba, and it would make sense to go surrounding and have a more direct connection with Latin America. That was the interest at the moment.
Can we make it a bit clearer? You had this, I learned it as Spanish-American War, and you'd end up with American troops within Cuba. Did they refuse to leave unless they were granted certain conditions?
Yeah, they did. They did. They, in the first instance, in 1898, Cuban independent forces were really exhausted. And though the Spanish forces were defeated, there was no way the Cuban forces could start another war against the U.S. military occupation. So the U.S. Army entered the war, occupied the main cities. They didn't let the Cuban army enter Santiago de Cuba. That was the biggest city in the battle area, because Havana was, of course, the most important city, but most of the battle and the independence struggle was taking care at the eastern side of the country. So they didn't let the Cuban generals enter Santiago de Cuba, and then they named a governor general at the moment, and they, until we didn't accept the Platt Amendment that was passed by U.S. Congress in 1902, they refused to give us independence. There were other provisions in the Platt Amendment, one of them explaining that the U.S. could intervene in Cuba whenever they would think that the situation in Cuba was leading to a threat for the national interest of the United States, which is very complicated because the national interest of the United States is a very elastic concept that they usually accommodate to whatever their needs are.
I've seen a spin put on it, the same sort of spin on the Monroe Doctrine, that this was really something benevolent that the U.S. was doing. Just one more question to make it quite clear about the status of Guantanamo. I know you have good medical service in Cuba. What if a Cuban doctor hears rumors that prisoners are being badly medically treated? Can he get permission to enter?
Well, I don't think so. And inmates have been badly treated there.
That's
I would say
it's a very mild way of putting it.
Yeah. And that has been the situation. But no, there's no permission. There has been, in some cases, meetings between the heads of both sides to look at the situation because it's a very tense situation there. At some point, it has been important to keep in touch. So an error in calculations or whatever doesn't lead to a war. So we have been very positive about it, but there's no crossing at the moment. And at some point, some of the Cuban workers from Guantanamo that was very poor, because imagine that before the revolution in 1959, Guantanamo supplied most of the bars and most of the women for leisure for the people in the naval base, as it is in many places where the Americans have naval bases. And sometimes you just listen to the incidents that have even happened in Japan in their bases. So at some point, they hired some Cubans that lived in the surroundings for internal work in the base. But most of these people have passed away, and they haven't recruited any additional person there from Cuba. So there's no crossing at the moment.
I think there are now 41 prisoners there, and mostly they weren't captured by American troops. They were actually sold to America by Afghan and Pakistani.
People who were dirt poor and were offered, was it $5,000 per head to offer a prisoner to the Americans in 2002 or 2001? Immediately after 9/11, that happened, I believe.
I'm not aware, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Now, another question about the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba. We hear talk about sanctions. There have been sanctions on Cuba for a long time, haven't there? What does that actually mean to the lives of people?
It's very interesting. It has a huge impact in the life of people. We got to take into consideration that Cuba is not permitted to use U.S. dollars in international transactions. And this is very complicated because it's not that you change the money for euros and you use the euros. You got also to prevent your money from circulating from an American bank. I have a colleague in Wellington. He's a deputy head of mission of Spain. He has $3,000 blocked in a U.S. account from paying 10 years ago vacations in Cuba. So that's very important. So it makes it very much expensive to do any international monetary transfer. So for Cuba, it's very expensive to do trade. No ship that docks in Cuba can dock in the U.S. in the next 180 days.
Really?
That makes it very difficult because trade doesn't work. That We get a ship of milk powder from the South Pacific, and we send a ship of rum and cigars. Well, not cigars to smoke free New Zealand, but maybe only rum. And it doesn't work that way. And if you're a cargo liner, you would try your ships in the Caribbean to profit from going to a port in the United States and do some cargo, because at the end, it's the biggest and most prosperous nation in the world. So it has a huge impact. Cuba cannot buy any product that contains more than 10% of American components.
Really?
And that is very bizarre. Put it simple, we can't buy planes except Russian planes, because most of Brazilian Embraer, European Airbuses, Canadian Bombardier, they all have more than 10% of American components, given the avionics and the engines. And yeah. Of course. And when you look at high technologies, most of the time, most of the most advanced products would have 10% of American components. And it's so bizarre, as one Cuban kid who got a prize once in a contest by an international environmental organization, he got among the kids that got the first prize. So they go to the prize ceremony in Algiers, and when they are given the prizes, the Cuban kid realizes that there's one thing missing in his bag that everyone has, and it was a Nikon camera. And Nikon refused to give the camera to the kid because it had more than 10% of American components. It was a very sad story. The kid got really lucky because a lot of people in solidarity start sending cameras to him. But it's a sad story still. How do you explain that to a 9-year-old kid?
Now, so on the people-to-people relationship, can Americans travel to Cuba?
Americans are not allowed to travel to Cuba as tourists. And that's probably why we have so many Canadians going to Cuba as tourists. So the thing is, they are, I think, 12 or 13 categories. I'm not exactly sure. But most of them are religious contact, support of the Cuban people, cultural exchanges, sports activities. It's really impacting a lot. We have 1.8 million Canadians going to Cuba a year out of a population, I would say, of around 30 million. Americans are closer to Cuba geographically, are 10 times the population of Canada. So imagine how important of an impact would that be for Cuban tourism industry. We had around 300,000 Americans going to Cuba at the moment. But it's very complicated because they make you sign an affidavit when you board a plane. Kiwis are very much affected at the moment because the cheapest way and most effective way to go to Cuba would be via Houston or San Francisco or L.A., fly to Air New Zealand, then you can fly from L.A. directly to Havana. Or L.A., Miami, Havana. But that now the problem is that they are asking everyone, no matter if you're not a resident of the United States or you're not a citizen of the United States, to sign this affidavit. I usually tell Kiwis, I know you're concerned about it. You just take on religious activity when you're in Cuba. You take a picture in front of a church. If talking to the priest, even better. You keep the picture in your memories taken. That's how you get away with it. But it's bizarre that they are even applying this kind of sanctions to foreign citizens that do not reside in the U.S.
So it's a worldwide thing, man. It's not just the U.S.
It's not an embargo. Yeah. People don't understand. It's not just an embargo. I can't have a credit card in New Zealand. No bank in New Zealand dares to give me a credit card. And that is really bizarre. And I can't blame ASB or TSB Bank. Mm. They are afraid of few sanctions that have worked.
I know there are some American activists who don't like what's going on. There's some anti-torture groups. Are they able to get in at all?
In Cuba?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have no restrictions unless you are in an international blacklist. We wouldn't block you from going to
Cuba. I mean,
do
the Americans allow them? That's.
Yeah. But from our side, there's not problem at all. We even print a tourist card that we don't stamp in the passport, just if you're concerned that Americans would know that you went to Cuba.
You're listening to Earthwise, broadcasting in Christchurch on Plains FM 96.9, in Hamilton on Free FM, and in Waikanae on Coast Access FM. Today's guest is the Cuban ambassador to New Zealand, His Excellency Mario Alguzarai.
Well, Mario, there's a meeting of IPCC climate scientists being held in Christchurch. And every country is affected, but your part of the world, the Caribbean, suffers especially from hurricanes, doesn't it? I know that this Southeast U.S. particularly New Orleans, was badly hit by Hurricane Katrina in August 2005. And I believe that Cuba offered to send medical aid. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. It was at the moment it was the moment of the inauguration of the Henry Reeves Brigade. Henry Reeves was an American that fought in the Independence War in Cuba. And we offered some doctors. The Bush administration refused. I think it was not probably a good example for the U.S., that small nation, communist nation, would be giving the U.S. This support. The death toll during the Katrina incident was huge.
I think it was 1,800, actually. And they needed medical help.
It was even more than that. And I was really surprised because being in that area, and we are very aware of that, you can prepare, you can do prepare against the impacts of cyclones and hurricanes. And if you have a good assessment of the conditions of the city, I think you have to mobilize faster and move people out of the place. That's what we do. When you compare the figures of casualties whenever a hurricane hits the Caribbean, the difference in casualties between Cuba and the rest of the islands is huge, in spite of the fact of Cuba being the
same hurricanes hit them.
Populated.
And I believe you have hardly any fatalities at all because you do make preparations.
Usually, no. We do very good preparation. And at the end, it's the most important thing is to save life.
Of course.
Of course, people struggling the most will be the ones that would have it more difficult to recover in terms of the impact for their daily life. But the most important is to preserve their lives, I would say.
I know that I think fascinating what I've heard of Cuba offering medical aid to countries that do suffer from some sort of calamity. A particular example interests me was the 2005 Kashmir earthquake.
Oh, yeah. That was a huge contingent. That was, I think the earthquake was in October the 8th, 2005. I remember because I was almost get sent with the team to Pakistan. I was just coming back from my posting in Shanghai. And just by chance did it end up in Pakistan. But that was a huge earthquake. I think the amount of deaths was in the tens of thousands. And it was a huge impact. We sent a big medical team. They did a great job. And I think all of this is related to the kind of education doctors received in Cuba. I think they are taught not to see medical assistant as a business, and they are focusing on solving the problem and taking care of health issues in the first instance, no matter what the difficult situation could be. And that's why at the end we have doctors and the most remote places of the Amazons in Brazil, in Africa, and even in the Pacific region. Now we have doctors in the Kiribati and Vanuatu. We had it before in Tuvalu as well. And when you look at the small Pacific Island nations like Kiribati, like Nauru, like Tuvalu, two or three doctors make a huge impact and can change the scope of the health situation in those countries, where they can hardly have a surgeon.
And they stay quite a while, don't they, on contracts that last several years, rather than just coming in to make the headlines in the newspapers and go away.
Yeah, they usually come in contracts of 2-3 years.
Yes.
And they stay long, and we usually try to change the medical team with same specialist, the brigade and the medical brigade in the Kiribati have been there for a long time. I think more than a decade.
Now, Cuba is south of Florida and west of Haiti. Is your nearest neighbor, isn't it?
To the east,
to the
yes.
East.
We are west to, yeah, you're correct. We are west to Haiti,
and they had
north of Jamaica.
Yeah, they had a terrible earthquake in 2010.
They had a terrible earthquake. We sent a huge medical brigade that is still in the place there. Fortunately, we have managed there to also to make some coordinations with other nations, and we have worked there with Norwegians and with other nations. There was a big response initially, but Haiti was already in a very difficult situation before the earthquake. After the earthquake, the impact has been tremendous. Mm-hmm.
And another part of that part of the world is Puerto Rico, but that's actually part of the United States, isn't it?
Yeah, Puerto Rico has a I don't know how they call it in English. It's an associate state, so
yes, it's not like the other states.
No, like the other states have a special. And the last hurricane is a proof of how it works different. There are still places of Puerto Rico without electricity at the moment.
Oh, it's in a terrible state.
And it's totally neglected by the rest of the United States, isn't it? It's just.
I think they're going to be victims of disaster capitalism. You know, they're going to try and privatize the schools and that sort of thing, which is what happened after Hurricane Katrina. So Cuba's health system is quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's quite good. I would say that if and I have read some studies that explains how effective if you take into consideration the amount of resources. It's probably one of the most cost-efficient services. And of course, there are places like New Zealand where the healthcare, regardless the shortcomings or whatever, it's very good. And we don't have the facilities that New Zealand has. My daughter went through a big surgery on her arm in New Zealand. She got wires and she got excellent health care in New Zealand, I have to say so. Mm-hmm. And we don't have most of the facilities and so on. But given the amount of money we have to invest in the health service, I think it's very effective.
Now, we've been talking about the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba. What about the rest of the world? There was an interesting vote in the U.N. General Assembly, wasn't there, last November?
Oh, yeah, last November. That's been happening since 1992. I would say it's 26 years already in the making. And it's a proof of how disrespectful the United States are about the will of the United Nations and the international community. And especially last year, in which they just said it bluntly that they wouldn't care if they would stay alone in the embargo on Cuba, which in 2007 was categorized by the United States Auditing Office as the most comprehensive set of sanctions imposed on any nation in the world. And it's complete disregard for international law and for the international community's will. It's only the U.S. and Israel voting against a resolution that every single country supports in the world.
And this was a vote of 191-2, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Oh, it's fascinating talking to you. By the way, can New Zealanders go? New Zealanders do go to Cuba, don't they?
Yeah, they do. We have a 50% increase in Kiwis going to Cuba for 2015 and 16. 2017, we still had a 10% increase. I love the way Kiwis go to Cuba. Kiwis go to Cuba to see the good things, the bad things, to see the achievements, the challenges, the hardships, and mix and mingle with people. New Zealanders are adventurers, I would say. And I would think that I love the way they go. They tour the whole country. Most of New Zealanders, not all of them, but most of them, I ask them, how long are you going to stay in Cuba? They said 21 days, 1 month. And most of them come and love it. We try to engage a lot with people going. It's no difficult, given the small population of New Zealand. When you have approached 20 or 30 groups by the 2 degrees contact that New Zealanders have, you have practically reached the half of the country. So more complicated in Auckland, but in the rest of the nation, it's that way. And they're going to Cuba, visiting many places. I know the Caribbean, for my side and my point of view, the Caribbean has the best beaches in the world, but New Zealanders wouldn't go so far looking for a beach. So I love what they do, and they go there to go all around the country and seize the time they are there to know as much as possible about Cuba. That has a good reputation in New Zealand. New Zealanders and Cubans know little from each other, but in general sense, there's a good vibe among both nations and the other ones. So, and when you talk about Cuba here, you get to Wellington, there's a Cuba Street that is one of the most famous street, and you have Havana Bar and Havana Coffee Works and Cuba Dupa Festival. You talk to people about Cuba here and people just think something that it's real, that Cuba is fun. So,
okay. Well, thank you for talking to us, Ambassador. And We must go there more sales worship.
Yeah.
Most happy to give you some tips about
it. Yeah, thank you.
Well, I think now I've just got time for a couple of quick news items. Shall I do the first one?
Sure.
Okay, just two news items. We're partly environment program and partly peace with justice program. So the first is an environment story, but they interact. We've recently had a program about plastic bags and how they affect the ocean. Well, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is floating off the coast of California, and it now measures 1.6 million square kilometers. That comes twice the size of about three times the size of France or twice the size of Texas. So this is a big issue, plastic bags.
All around the world. And President Trump's latest appointments, very disturbing for peace activists, in fact, for the whole world. I'm sure the world is sort of shivering in dread as what's going to happen. John Bolton is National Security Advisor, hardly a diplomat himself. He's the head of the American NGO, Peace Action has said, John Bolton's record of pushing for military solutions to diplomatic problems is unsurpassed. And another appointment, the head of the CIA, the new head of the CIA, Gina Haspel. In 2002, she directed the secret CIA torture program, Black Site, in Thailand. So these are not very welcome appointments.
It's rather disturbing.
So you just have to cross your fingers. And I'm sure in Cuba you cross your fingers too.
We do, as the rest of the world. This is a crazy moment.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Ambassador, for coming and talking to us. It's been fascinating, and we wish you well, and I wish both of our countries well. I think we'll finish on a positive note with some lovely music from Cuba, from a group called Buena Vista Social Club. And I think the song's called Chan Chan, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Thank you very much for having me here with you guys.
Llego a Puerto, voy para Mayarí. Llego a Puerto, voy para Marcané. Llego a Puerto.